So, what do you think? Who do you think is the worst or the lamest Spidey villain?
Vermin.
Vermin, really?
Spider-Man 3 Venom, I think would be in there, but that's pretty specific.
Yeah, I'm sorry. For me, it's always going to be Slide with a Y. He spelled his name with a Y. That should be already be an indication of how bad he was as a villain.
Don't know, I think
That
spelling your
guy.
name with a Y automatically makes you cooler.
No, he was one of those 70s black guys who talked all in jive. He wore all white, which is bad already, considering he's a racist black stereotype. And his whole thing is he's slippery, so people can't grab him.
So he was Shaft, but
He was Shaft,
lubricated.
but he
So
literally,
he
his
was a
whole.
lubricated Shaft, is that what you're saying, Tom?
Did Spider-Man work the Shaft?
The thing is, his whole shtick was he made a chemical for non-stick frying pans, but when no one wanted to buy it, he coated a suit in it and went sliding around, robbing places, and couldn't be grabbed or webbed or anything, and basically set the civil rights movement back 20 years. I'm sorry.
Practically, though,
Hold.
in a
I'm
practical
sold on this
sense,
guy.
no, in a very practical sense, that's a cool ability to have.
To set the civil rights movement back?
No, not necessarily just being black or not, but the ability to not be captured by
The thing is,
conventional means.
the
Especially
problem
for
is,
Spider Man,
who's all about sticky.
yeah, but that's the problem is his character was so utterly lame, so narrow-sighted, and so stupid. I think they killed him off recently because he sucked. Hypno Hustler lasted longer than Slide, and Hypno Hustler is all kinds of messed up black stereotype.
Well, let's be honest here. Spider-Man is not known for his villains, with the exception of Venom and Harry Osborn.
And
Yeah,
Carnage is a good one.
Or
I'm
Norman Osborn,
Norman.
sorry.
Yeah, well, Norman and Harry.
Spider-Man has the most recognizable rogues gallery in comics alongside Batman and the Flash.
See, I would disagree and say that Batman has the most iconic and recognizable rogues gallery in modern, well, in really in pop culture.
Who does Spider-Man have that's actually cool, though? Like, all his villains are noticeable, but it's because they're really ridiculous.
Well, they're also the other thing is even the ridiculous ones get, except for Slide, even all the ridiculous ones get to show off how cool they are. I mean, Electro has shown off that he's possibly the most dangerous villain Spidey has just because he's freaking raw energy. You have characters like the Kingpin who have no powers at all but are very dangerous. You have
Wasn't the
the
Kingpin more of a daredevil villain?
he made his first appearance in Spider-Man as a Spidey villain. And then Frank Miller co-opted him for Daredevil because he thought it would work better. And then, as a result, everyone associates Kingpin with Daredevil and seem to forget that he started off as one of Spidey's arch enemies.
Well, that's fine.
And like I said,
That's the book where he found love, was over in Daredevil.
I don't know. I kind of liked when Kingpin was in Spider-Man just because he was so different from a lot of the villains that Spidey had faced up to that point, who were all like products of mad science or whatnot. Here was just a guy who was really, really big, but all of it was muscle, who basically ran a criminal empire that Spidey couldn't touch. And he also made his first appearance in one of the most significant storylines of Spidey, the Spider-Man No More. So that's one reason I always will associate Kingpin with Spider-Man. But the thing
Okay,
is, like I said,
but then you have the Kingpin, and then you have people like the Vulture, and Hobgoblin, and
and
Dr.
Scorpion.
Octopus, who's actually a good villain, and Scorpion, and Rhino. It's like a lot of these people, it's like they're like, all right, what animal from the zoo haven't we used for a villain yet?
Oh,
Well, man.
that's actually quite funny. In the early 2000s, J. Michael Straczynski, the guy who did Babylon 5, took over writing duties on Spider-Man, and he introduced this idea that Spidey's powers were actually somehow mystic and totemic in nature, which is why so many of his enemies were animal themed, because it was just basically him attracting enemies of similar totemic background. At the end, Spidey was like, "You know what? I don't care if it's magic or science. I am who I am," and
So
left it
it
at that.
was
I
a
remember that,
radioactive
actually.
totemic spider that bit him
It
in
was
the
a
1960s.
it was an odd storyline that was supposed to ask some questions, and I just remember at the end of that storyline that Spidey asked some shaman guy, "So which is it, magic or science?" And the shaman was like, "Well, if you ask a scientist why the sun rises, he could talk to you about magnetics and gravitational pull and planetary motion. And if you ask a shaman why the sun rises, it's because it has to." They're both right answers, and it doesn't really matter which one you prefer. And that's probably one of the more profound things I've read from the entire 50-year history of Spider-Man.
Wasn't Morbius in that little arc as well, or similar to Morbius?
Morbius seemed to vanish for a while, and then now he's making a grand comeback in the current run of Spidey, which is probably one of the best runs on Spidey I've read for a very long time. And I love the fact that he's got his 70s glam vampire costume back.
Oh, God.
No, I'm sorry. His 90s black, all-black costume was just like, dear God, has this decade not been inundated enough with bad fashion in comics?
Yes, but has this has the 2000s not been inundated enough with glam bullshit vampires?
Absolutely agree.
I will take Morbius and his genuine vampirism over
his vampirism. He infected himself with like stupid science.
No, but my whole point is he is what you think of when you think of a vampire. Ugly. Well, not maybe. Well, ugly. It was scary, blood sucking, scary as hell kind of character. Not, oh, I sparkle in sunlight. Go to hell, Peter.
He's what you think of when you think of a Nosferatu.
He's what you would think of. And I'm sorry, I still love that in the 90s cartoon, as lame as it was so batshit crazy that his whole thing was he can't bite people in the 90s cartoon, so they gave him little puckered holes on his palms so he could suck.
Oh, God, blood. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, classy.
Dude, it's like, dude, the guy looks like he has like some kind of STD on his palm, which raises more questions that you should probably wonder about.
Dude, that cartoon was great. That was
a fantastic cartoon.
Not like Spider-Man Unlimited. That cartoon was terrible.
No, Unlimited. The problem with Unlimited is it was supposed to be an adaptation of Spider-Man 2099, and then it kind of spiraled because they couldn't do 2099 for some reason or another. So they just kind of mixed elements of 2099 to make, you know, their own Spidey cartoon,
which was terrible.
It was different. I've seen worse experiences with Spidey cartoons. I mean, the 2000s CG MTV produced cartoon based on the film, that was terrible. Just because they could barely use any villains, they always had to have some musical celebrity voicing a villain, and they couldn't do anything because they had to make sure that they had the catch 22 of, remember, this is set between movies 1 and 2, so we cannot mess with it. And then they decided to have him quit in the final episode and end on a cliffhanger because it got canceled. It's like, goddamn you, MTV.
Yeah, voiceover aside, the animation style was pretty awesome.
But here's the thing is, the best Spidey cartoon for me, the one that was like Batman the Animated Series, but for Spidey, was the Spectacular Spider-Man cartoon that ran for 2 seasons. That cartoon just took everything from the original comics, the Ultimate comics, the films, and just distilled it into one perfect Spidey medium for anyone who was a fan from any of the previous ways of finding out about Spider-Man to just go into it and enjoy.
Is that the one that's on Disney XD or whatever?
No, right now the new cartoon is Ultimate Spider-Man, which is all right. It's not Spectacular Spider-Man, but that's like comparing Batman the Animated Series to Batman the Brave and the Bold, because this one's more focused on humor and team-up, and also asks an interesting question, like, what if Nick Fury decided to stop this kid and say, we're not just going to let you run around without some training.
Brave and the Bold. Isn't that also like a soap opera?
Yeah, and it got canceled. No. Bold and the Beautiful,
that's right.
And the Batman is the Batman Brave and the Bold.
Yeah, they just canceled last year. It was pretty decent, though, for what it was. Like, they went back to, like, the old, like, Adam West campiness, and, like, Diedrich Bader was the voice of Batman, which is just, that's just spectacular, because he's great.
I also love the fact that it was just a love letter to the Silver Age.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, one thing I like about this new Ultimate Spidey is that, you know, it keeps some of the general idea of Spider-Man, but instead of rehashing the same storylines we've seen over and over, it goes into a whole new direction with the whole S.H.I.E.L.D. involvement and this whole Spidey with other teen heroes. And my favorite thing is, you know, Agent Coulson from the S.H.I.E.L.D. scenes in the various Marvel movies now? Mm-hmm. That one S.H.I.E.L.D. agent guy? He's in this cartoon masquerading as the new principal.
Lol.
Well, isn't Brian Michael Bendis working on Unlimited or Ultimate Spider-Man?
Yeah, well, he's working on the new comic run.
That too, but I thought he was one of the writers for the cartoon as well. That's
one of the producers. Among the writing staff are Paul Dini from Batman the Animated Series and Man of Action, the team of animation guys who came together and created the whole Ben 10 franchise.
Ben 10 was pretty cool, actually.
Yeah. It was pretty cool when it started, and then they made him a teenager and ignored everything that made the original show so cool.
That's because teenagers suck.
Tell me about it.
Let's be honest. When we were all teenagers, we all sucked. Just saying that right now.
I don't know. I was pretty awesome when I was a teenager. I was reading my Star Trek books, and I was playing video games.
Awesome. Yeah, speaking of teenagers, I love the fact that if you ever reread Amazing Fantasy number 15, Spidey's first appearance, he sounds like he's going to go off and shoot the whole school before he gets his powers. It's like, I'll show them. I'll show them all. It's like, oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Maybe he should.
And, hey, speaking of Spider-Man's age, he's turning 50 this year, which brings us to episode 26 of Marooner's Talk, Spidey's Turning 50.
Man, go ahead and continue. Good for his age.
He is.
I want to know what his diet is like. I mean, I know that there's a lot of, like, exercise, but there's also a lot of ass-kicking involved. How has he not had to have, like, 4 lung transplants, a new liver, possibly a new heart, you know?
Have you seen the women he hangs out with? Don't you know that healthy love life leads to rejuvenated existence?
Yeah, but seriously, he doesn't have, like, Wolverine's accelerated healing here. That guy gets beat up worse than, like, anyone else in the Marvel Universe, with the exception of Wolverine.
And he still survives?
Yeah.
They actually clarified that he has a slight healing factor, not as accelerated as someone like Wolverine, but it's strong enough. However, he gets the common cold, his powers turn off. Still love that.
That sucks.
It's like the greatest weakness ever. It's like, God, he can never catch a break. The nerdiest superhero of all time.
Well, I'm looking up his power set in the new Marvel tabletop RPG book.
And?
Let's see, we have spider powers, which include enhanced senses, stamina, superhuman reflexes, superhuman strength, and wall crawling, and web slinging, which is enhanced durability, weapon, and swing line. So, yeah, he's got, it says nothing in here about accelerated healing.
Well, that's on RPG.
But it's the new one, and I got it at C2E2 last week.
Yes, but I have the official Marvel handbook of Spider-Man, which mentions his slight accelerated healing. It's slight. Just slight.
Yeah, but that's not enough to fix liver damage or internal injuries or...
Considering the man doesn't drink, considering the... And, of course, they've actually clarified that one of the recent storylines, they've shown a new... Well, not really a new character, but they show that there's an underground doctor called Night Nurse who basically every hero in the business that can't go to a hospital just goes to her and... And she does it pro bono.
Isn't that what they call NyQuil in the UK?
Yeah, actually it is.
So he goes over to the UK, hits up a pharmacist, buys himself a bottle of NyQuil, and he's fine. So I think we've stumbled onto something here.
What do you think about Spidey in England? Like, one of his most popular team-ups from the old days was his team-up with Captain Britain. Does anyone remember Captain Britain?
Oh, hell yeah, Excalibur. Yeah.
Dude, he's huge right now. He was just one of the central characters in the last run of Uncanny X-Force.
Yeah, he's Psylocke's brother, right?
Yeah.
Now he heads up this thing called the Captain Britain Corps, which essentially protects the multiverse.
Wait, Captain Britain is Cyclops' brother?
Psylocke.
No, he's
Psylocke. He's
Psylocke.
Britain or...
Braddock.
Braddock.
Yep.
Okay, I was confused for a moment.
Ultimate Captain first got killed. It was actually kind of interesting. Because the Ultimate Universe, they don't care. They just kill people.
Right.
Like, Wolverine's dead over there. And so is Professor X, shot by future Wolverine.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. The future Wolverine that looks kind of like a messed up Cable.
Yeah, he was Cable in that universe, was future Wolverine. So, like, I'm sorry, Professor X. Bam! Shot in the head.
This is why I don't, this is why I stick to Spidey comics, because sometimes other comics just get a little out there with the alternate universe stuff.
Okay, I'm sorry, hold on. Are Peter Parker and Mary Jane still married?
No, they are still... do not get me started.
I'm just pointing out the fallacy of saying that the other comics are where the messed up alternates happen, because, you know, the devil retcon kind of stuff.
The fact that silly. I've noticed a trend in the recent run by Dan Slott where it seems like he's pushing Mary Jane and Peter Parker back together. And that's the thing, is like this idea of what Spider-Man is to people, because to Quesada, who hopefully will be removed from his position of power at some point soon.
Yeah, he's a bit of a...
The thing about, to him, Spider-Man's whole thing is the soap opera of being a young bachelor kind of character. And for me, who spent the last 2 decades of my life reading the comics, I'm used to him being married. And that's one thing I liked about the Spider-Man comics, is that he went to high school. Then he actually graduated high school, unlike other teen superheroes who perpetually were still in high school. He went to college. He became a graduate student. He got married. He was a character who basically grew up like everyone else did. And then we have to keep him from having a baby, so we're coming up with this convoluted plot to make sure he doesn't have his pregnant wife doesn't give birth. And we have to get rid of the marriage because the marriage ages the character. And as someone pointed out, so wait, you remove the marriage, so it's like they never got married, but every story still happened. So Peter Parker's been living in sin for the last 20-odd years, and that's the message you want to send to kids.
Yeah, long-term relationships over a 50-year time frame are a little hard to work out. But then again, it also is kind of ridiculous. He's all like, hey, Mephisto, help a brother out.
That's the thing. I remember when that story came out, I'm reading through it, and I'm just like, what? What? There are so many things that were wrong with that story. It's like, I'm sorry, Quesada, I know you had... Couldn't you just divorce them? Couldn't you have them break up? You had to go to Mephisto? During the Clone Saga, someone bounced the idea, what if it's Mephisto that's behind the Clone Saga? And everyone's like, no, that's stupid. Hello?
But you could only go so far.
The Clone Saga didn't even try.
You can't do...
Clone Saga didn't even try Mephisto.
The relationships, though, with 50 years in there, it's just like Superman and Lois Lane. You do everything after a few years. There's nothing else to say. They've got to do something crazy and reset it.
Well, I don't think they should reset it. I think they should just push it, carry it on. Have them have a breakup. Have someone die. Have someone have a kid. Do not...
They can't have someone die. I mean, like, look at Aunt May.
Again, this was the same problem that Cassandra... Because I was like, no, we have to have his daughtering aunt as well. It's like, you know, I like what they've done with Aunt May in the recent comics.
She, like, got married and moved?
Yes, that. But the fact is, it's like, I'm sorry. One thing. Years of Spidey reading tells me one thing. That one, Aunt May would not be happy her nephew made a deal with the devil to save her life. That'd be like, you know, that'd be 2 weeks of beatings in my
house.
Does
she even know that?
No. And in fact, no one else knows. Even Peter and Mary Jane don't know because Mephisto retconned that too. I want to take a copy of One More Day, just cut off Mephisto's head, and copy and paste a photo of Joe Quesada's face over Mephisto's, because that's pretty much what the story is. It's Quesada's like, hey, this is what's going to happen.
Now, did it turn back the clock at all, or is Peter Parker now still his proper age? He's just lost
he's
all
still
of
the
that
proper
time.
Age. Oh. He's still the proper age. They had this ridiculous story, One Moment in Time, and it's supposed to be like, oh, hey, so what changed? So we go back in time and find out some ordinary guy, clocked Spidey over the head with a brick, and that's why he missed his wedding. And then they decide, oh, they can't get married. And then they spend years going through all this thing, and instead of the Mephisto bit, when the timeline catches back up after Civil War, they decide to go to Doctor Strange, Iron Man, and Mr. Fantastic and have them use some techno magic thing to make sure no one in the world remembers Spider-Man is Peter Parker, except for Mary Jane and Peter. And MAA miraculously
gets surgery that saves her life. And I'm like, you needed the devil to tell this story?
So what I'm hearing right now is that the reason why nobody really cares about Spider-Man's villains is because his story is absolutely ludicrous and makes the idea of a billionaire who has all sorts of ridiculous toys and beats up criminals during his nights seem actually feasible.
Are we really going to play the Spidey version?
No, it's but just like the thing is, it's like you listen to these Spider-Man stories and they are just so ludicrously out there.
Well, that's the
you
thing
know, I mean, it's just because God forbid that they allow actual character progression to happen with this character. Like, seriously, how many great stories could have been told if they had just left Spider-Man as being out there? Spider-Man is Peter Parker.
But then he wouldn't be the wisecracking, youthful, you know, Spider-Man that everyone loves. He's got that kiddish jokester appearance, you know, and if they make him a bitter asshole, people are going to get angry.
Yeah, that's one thing. But at the same time, like I said, this was the problem, is that the current stories are actually taking things in new directions. They're actually developing, and they were stories that developed Peter's character, developed all his characters, and moved on. This one story, editorially mandated by Joe Quesada, messed up so much. There's a reason readership went down after that story, is because everyone's like, are you kidding? And now it's coming back up because we actually have a consistently good writer, Dan Slott, working on Amazing Spider-Man. We have good stories. We have amazing things. I mean, this summer, in the climax of Amazing Spider-Man's Ends of the Earth, we're going to get the end of the greatest Sinister Six story to ever be written, apparently. And we've also got the appearance of Spider-Man meeting Ultimate Spider-Man, meaning the new Ultimate Spider-Man, Miles Morales. And we are having so many reprints of the good Spidey stories in the comic book store now.
See, I have found in the last 10 years Ultimate Spider-Man to be a much more compelling read than the normal Spider-Man books.
I like
especially
Ultimate Spider-Man.
Now that they made the change to Miles Morales.
I like totally the change agree. To Miles Morales, but I am sorry, I disagree that it's better than Amazing. It's at least on the same level as Amazing Spider-Man. I mean, I like the fact that the Ultimate Spidey books actually take the time to, you know, play with new ideas of classic characters and even go as far as to kill off Peter Parker and introduce a whole new character to be Spider-Man. But at the same time, I still like the fact that Amazing Spider-Man continues on the vein it did with the development and the characters and stories I grew up with still in continuity.
But that continuity keeps getting screwed with by Mephisto, so it's not really the same continuity at all anymore.
Okay, that only was one time, and
but that's a huge thing.
It is a huge thing. It's ridiculous. Yeah,
like, that would be like going back. That'd be like going back and saying that the whole like Bane breaking Batman thing never happened. Even in the New 52, that still happened.
It'd be crazy, again, like saying that Batman transported back into time and had to fight his way back and Robin. Sorry.
They retconned the shit out of that before they even went to the New 52.
Yeah, hopefully they keep Grant Morrison away from comics for a while.
No, he's like Grant Morrison is okay. Like he's very hit or miss. When he hits, he's amazing.
Oh yeah, that's true.
The thing about of all the times in all of Spideydom that there was such a major retcon like that, this is the only time it was this freaking epically bad. And I'm looking forward to the resolution when they finally fix this. Because I'm sorry, there's no way this shit's just going to be like, oh, that just happened and we're just going to carry on. Like, no. Somewhat writer is going to stop and say, okay, eventually there will be a reckoning between Spider-Man and Mephisto for that bullshit.
Well, how many times, though, has there been memory loss or memory wiping or resetting of people in the Spider-Man universe? And it's
okay, Harry the Osborn family seems prone to amnesia. That's about it.
There's been a lot of storylines that have involved people kind of reneging on things and memory wiping and amnesia. Just it's really confusing after a while.
It's not even just that. It's just that, like, there's a certain level of suspension of disbelief that, especially with comic books, you have to maintain. But Spider-Man, who's one of the relatively more quote-unquote relatable characters, really has an even higher suspension of disbelief than, like, say, Iron Man or even, like, Thor.
But that's the thing, is that life
doesn't always throw the same old stuff at you. Sometimes you find yourself in odder and odder things. And considering that Spider-Man lives in a universe filled with Norse gods, World War II heroes, aliens, mad scientists, he's eventually going to cross paths with some of this weird stuff.
I'm not saying that he shouldn't, but I'm just saying that, like, I find it strangely more believable that in, like, the current Mighty Thor run, that Thor, who is dead at the hands of the Serpent, is capable of killing the Eater of the Gods, restoring his existence and people's belief in him, than it is that Spider-Man miraculously got, like, 10 years of his life retconned away.
And thought it was from a brick in the head, because his spider sense wouldn't have warned him about that.
Exactly. I have to bring up the fact that every Spider fan, and hell, a few of the Spidey writers, have gone above and beyond to try their best to pretend that those two storylines never happened and work with what they have. And eventually, I can see that eventually a writer's going to come along and going to say, screw this noise, we're going to set back everyone remembering that he was married at some point, at least. Even if they're not together now, we're going to at least bring that back and pretend this whole devil shit never happened because this is stupid.
Yeah.
Especially because there have been some bad Spidey stories, especially in the 90s, but I'm still stunned by how bad Quesada made it just because he had desperately decided, oh, we cannot have our most kid appeal character be married. It's like, you know what? You guys are already publishing a book called in the Marvel Ages line that's set when Spidey's still a kid. Can't that be the book I give children while I read my married Spider-Man while I'm in my 30s? And I just made a horrible case for comic book fans.
Yeah. Adam, I'm getting the sense that you and I are not terribly huge Spider-Man fans.
It's tough because I love the character of Spider-Man, and he's always been sort of like that cultural icon. But the last 10 or 15 years of comic books of his have just been bad, real bad. And now rebooting the movie franchise already, too. Like, they
pretty good, though.
It looks like it's going to be comparing the reboot of the new Spidey to the original trilogy. To me, it's feeling more and more like trying to compare the Tim Burton Batman to Batman Begins. You know, they're both great movies. They're just very different takes on it.
But it just shows how many times they've tried to remake Spider-Man to, like, there's just something that's always missing from him. And they can't seem to find out how to keep him happy with all the fans. It's just so bizarre at this point where they just can't do anything with him.
It's what I like to call the two sides of the coin characterization. In the case of Spider-Man, we have two sides of the coin. One is the fact that Spidey's an extroverted, super, really, really smart, never gives up character who, even when the world craps all over him, can still hope for the best and push on through. And then we have the other side of the coin, which is angst, 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 depression, 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 nobody likes me, blah, 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 whine, whine, whine. Every superhero has this. For Batman, it's the, I should trust my friends and teammates more. And then, other side of the coin, Batman trusts nobody. Superman, I relate to everybody because I am just like you. I'm such an alien. I feel so alienated. Every superhero has this. The problem is,
you hit the nail on the head, though, when you said that they're trying to market him to kids still. That's why they don't want him married. Like, comic book fans have aged. Like, all of us grew up reading Spider-Man. At this point, I want my comics to be as adult as my video games or my television that I watch.
Exactly.
They're not a children's medium anymore.
Spider-Man
between the two.
Yeah, Spider-Man now, as they try to appeal to the younger audiences, is like the new prequels for Star Wars. It's something where it's just like the original fan base grew the hell up. It's time for stuff to keep growing up with them.
Exactly. You know?
I mean, especially like, I'm going to go off on a little brief rant here on the prequel trilogy, where it's all like, man, that's supposed to be a dark time. You know, the Republic is going to fall. Anakin Skywalker, the hope of the Jedi Order, turns to the dark side. Kids are getting murdered everywhere. Bounty hunters, war. And then it gets turned into this bright, fluffy happiness with a whole bunch of like Michael Bay-style close shots. And all they needed was some circle cam and Shia LaBeouf, and it would have been perfect.
But it's, like I think it's the same thing, though. They need that. Batman has managed to, even though his popularity is obviously growing with the movies, they have The Brave and the Bold, and they give kids these things to go after, but they've kept the original stories growing with us. And that's what I would like to see them do with Spider-Man.
That's what actually, like I said, the recent run by Dan Slott, every time Dan Slott has jumped in since after the whole Mephisto thing, Dan Slott's writing has consistently pushed for Spidey to be fun, relatable, enjoyable for everyone who grew up with him and new people, but at the same time, continue going forward. And that's what I like about the new run where Spidey, where Peter Parker finally has his dream job as a scientist. He's actually doing good things. He's actually, because they decided to put him on the Avengers, he's taking advantage of that. You know, he actually is not alone in the universe, but he still can handle things by himself. These new stories are pretty much the kind of direction I'm hoping that the Spidey comics keep going in for a while, because bad things still will happen. There'll still be problems, but they're still going to push forward and try new things. I mean, I love the fact that they made J. Jonah Jameson mayor, because you can't have him forever being publisher at the Daily Bugle, because we don't know where newspapers are going to be in 5 years. So, but having him as mayor, it still keeps his ability to interact with Spider-Man on a regular basis and still hate his guts. And like I said, new directions, but keeping the classic idea. And that's why I love is that ever since these new comics have come out, I haven't bought Spidey comics for so long because of how pissed off I was because of the whole Mephisto thing. But then I start picking up the new stuff, and I'm like, this is good. This is the kind of Spidey stories I want to read. And I'm loving every moment of it.
I want to see Spider-Man go to a different city at some point. I feel like tying him into New York, where he has to be interacting with the X-Men and the Fantastic Four and the Avengers and everybody else, really limits, because they have to kind of stick with the continuity of every comic book.
Like, so they move the X-Men to San Francisco.
Some of the X-Men.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we're not. This is the Spidey chat, not the X-Men chat.
I just want to see Spider-Man on his own.
He actually was in Pittsburgh for one storyline during the Clone Saga, when they were moving Ben Reilly in as the Spider-Man of New York, and Peter Parker and his pregnant wife Mary Jane. She was pregnant, Quesada. She was pregnant. You can't make us forget.
I don't think he's one of our five listeners.
but yeah, the thing is, while they were in Pittsburgh, Peter Parker got involved in an adventure, so he put on his classic Spidey duds and was pretty much the Spider-Man of Pittsburgh for a while. And the thing is, Spider-Man is as much a New Yorker as he is anything else, which is why I'm glad that the new Scarlet Spider comic is set in Houston. I mean, that's a Spider-Man in Texas. That, I'm looking forward to see how that plays out, especially with his less friendly version, Kane, being the new Scarlet Spider.
Well, and I don't understand, unless they've changed the Houston skyline considerably, but it's not exactly a New York skyscrapers everywhere kind of town.
Considering that in the first couple of issues, Kane carjacked a taxi.
Okay.
Again, like I said, he's not the nice Spidey.
He doesn't exactly need to have the swing around town. He just carjacks to get around.
Or he's more likely to climb on top of a car or something. Kane is not Peter Parker.
We could see some beautiful shots of him swinging through an oil field, though. You know, got all those oil derricks out there.
That would actually be kind of cool. I would like to actually see a fight scene on one of those oil derricks, you know, especially because it's going up and down while he's trying to stay on it.
Oh, it'll happen. You know it'll happen.
Oh, hell yeah. And I like the new stuff that they're doing with Venom, you know, making him the Black Ops government agent character. And now he's part of the Secret Avengers.
Dude, Venom is awesome right now. That has been a great run. Like, the whole Circle of Four storyline, like, that was great.
He is so much more interesting than Spider-Man right now.
No, I'm not trying to make you angry. It's just so good. And especially like the last issue of Venom, where him and Peter Parker are at that diner, and he's all like wants to tell him that he's Venom.
Yeah,
that he's was all cool. about to, and then he gets called for Secret Avengers stuff. And he gets up there, and especially the whole aspect of his character where he is fully bonded with the Venom symbiote, but he doesn't want people to know it.
especially because he's a funk, because he's had a history of addiction before, so Flash has to deal with that. And I'm waiting for the shoe to drop. Have you guys been reading Carnage USA?
No. Ended like 15 pages too soon.
One thing I like about Carnage USA is the fact that we have the new Venom, Flash Thompson, going up against the classic Carnage.
Huh?
Yeah.
Flash Thompson is Venom now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
But
shows how much I know.
He's a good guy. I mean, it's a pretty interesting take.
Yeah, like the idea of Venom now is that Flash lost his legs to an IED in, what, Afghanistan or Iraq?
Mm-hmm.
And so the
government chose him. To be
the government's all like, dude, you're Venom, do Black Ops stuff for us.
You can only do it 48 hours, and then you have to take off the suit.
Yeah, because they determined that if at past 48 hours, the chances of a complete bond are exponentially increased.
Hmm.
And in one of his first stories, he actually got stranded down in the Savage Land in Antarctica for something like 5 days. So... He's going up against Kraven the Hunter. It was pretty sweet.
Kraven, that's actually an interesting thing to bring up to my deranged classic Spidey fanboy mind, because Kraven's Last Hunt was one of those stories that I always hold as an example of what a really good Spidey story should be, because that ended with the death of a major villain. Kraven shot himself, and I wasn't sure I liked the fact that in the Gauntlet they brought Kraven back, but I liked the fact that Kraven didn't like being brought back. And it adds this whole new element to his character, because now he desperately wants to die, and the only person who can kill him is Spider-Man, and Spider-Man's not going to kill him. So it's like, I'm kind of enjoying that aspect of it. And I think like I said, Spidey has some really interesting villains, and that's why I always say that he has one of the best rogues galleries, because you got characters like the Rhino, you got guys like Kraven, you got Mysterio.
You're really saying Rhino is a great classic villain?
But he's
one of those ones I'm kind of like, him and there's Man-Wolf and Puma and Jake. What? Seriously?
I gotta say, I like Rhino, but
Rhino's
mainly
awesome.
Because of his crossover with Deadpool.
Oh, when he was a little Rhino?
Yeah, when he got shrunk because Deadpool had the little aerosol can of Pym particles.
dear God. But the thing is, recently during one of the storylines, they decided to play up the fact that when Rhino first appeared in comics... he was a spy in the Cold War that they gave him this Rhino suit and gave him these powers. So, some writer was like, yeah, we completely forgot. Rhino is supposed to be a Russian. So what would that be like? So they brought up this whole idea of him eventually quitting being the Rhino, settling down, getting married, and some new guy in the Rhino suit trying to kill him to prove that he's a better Rhino and ends up murdering his wife. So now... Rhino's character has become more interesting because now he just wants the world to burn because he's lost his wife.
Wait. So Rhino was originally intended to be a spy during the Cold War. So
they put
in their
big
infinite wisdom, they put him in a giant Rhino suit.
This is why the Russians lost, guys.
Have you ever noticed that all the Cold War Russian spies in the Marvel Universe were kind of obvious?
Huh. Yeah.
Like I said, I like the fact that in recent Spidey comics, they decided to take a look at the classic characters and, think about what made them classic and then what can push them. Like, Electro now is more electricity than man, and he's become obsessed with basically bringing down the world because he's slowly dying due to his own condition. Doc Ock is become the poster child for slowly dying, since they've made him this withered husk of a man that wears full body armor and has more arms because he can't move his body, because years of being a pudgy scientist getting the crap kicked out of him by superheroes has not done well for his health. I like the fact that they're changing up the villains but keeping the general core of what made them such great villains. It's one reason I'm enjoying Ends of the Earth, because all Doc Ock wants is to go out on a high note, which is either kill the world or have the world acknowledge that he saved it. He's happy with either one. And I'm loving the fact that he's turned the Sinister Six into the ultimate villain team capable of taking on the Avengers.
And also the fact that Spidey has taken charge of the Avengers for this storyline and socked Al Gore.
What?
What?
In one of the stories, it turns out that the Chameleon was masquerading as Al Gore to try and get world leaders and whatnot to go behind Doc Ock's plan to save the world, because Ock has a machine that can accelerate the greenhouse effect or stop it entirely. And all he wants is recognition that he saved the world. And
why,
all that.
Why Al Gore?
Because who do you think, because honestly, who of all, I don't know why they picked him, probably because his whole anti-climate change issue, but Chameleon masqueraded as Al Gore and was pushing for Doc Ock's plan in the World Council, and Spider-Man and Captain America and Thor show up, and like, how can you speak to world leaders like this? And Thor's like, he is my scientific council, and I am the Prince of Asgard. And then Spidey socks Al Gore because he's been developing technology specifically to deal with the Sinister Six. So he recognized that it was Chameleon's heartbeat because he based his helmet's technology on Daredevil's hearing.
I am so ridiculously confused by all of the ridiculousness that is involved in this explanation.
Where does Spider-Man get all his money for this technology? That's my question.
Have you not been? I just told you he got a job working for a lab, and it turns out that
this goes back pretty far, though. Like, how did he ever afford all that web formula stuff? Like, I don't think he was picking it up at Walgreens or something.
And well, the implication is he managed to make it out of chemicals you could just buy at a chemistry set. Mm.
Yeah, it just seems like he had a lot of technology for being a poor, broke guy, you know?
Yeah, and
I think it's because he had all the technology that he was poor and broke.
Yeah, like, so let's be honest here. Like, my little sister worked in a lab doing, like, chemistry and all that stuff work. Labs don't pay well.
Like, well, Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, unless he's, like, running the lab and, like, running a company that has, like, billion-dollar patents, but...
Yeah, but here's the thing. The lab that Peter Parker is working for right now, Horizon, it's basically this whole operation. It's sort of like, imagine Mac meets Pixar, that kind of thing, right? The head scientist there, Max Modell, basically lets his scientists have free reign to make whatever they want and full privacy as long as they turn in something that each quarter that they can patent and sell. And because Peter Parker has so much experience with crazy science from dealing with supervillains, he's able to come up with interesting new technology that he can pass off for simple patents, but the basis of it is him using it for Spidey-based stuff. So he has free reign to make all this stuff and use it, and it helps that Modell thinks that Peter Parker is actually the tech guy behind Spider-Man's technology.
So they're really just turning him into Bruce Wayne, basically.
Everyone knows that the Horizon Lab thing isn't going to last forever because it's Spider-Man, but it's going to be an interesting time while he's still there. Mm-hmm. Especially because they said that it's not like Spidey's going to have all these super suits that he's going to keep forever. Eventually, it's going to go back to him having a hard luck thing, but like I said, I hope the spirit of him still capitalizing on the fact that he's smart will continue.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because he's been blacklisted as a photographer by Jameson, and he can't go back to teaching high school because as a result of everyone having their memories wiped of why he quit teaching because he revealed he was Spider-Man, it's recognized that he just basically didn't turn up, and he's like, yeah, my life sucks no matter what I do.
I forgot that that mayors of cities can ban photographers. The Constitution doesn't actually work, and really.
No, the thing is, Jameson had Peter Parker make a fake photo for him for some reason back when he was working with the Bugle, and as a result, Jameson threw Peter under the bus when he needed to. But every newspaper has him blacklisted as a photographer you can't trust.
Hmm.
So that's why they've decided to push this whole Peter actually making money with the thing he studied, which is science. So while I doubt he'll ever have a job as good as Horizon Labs, it's nice to know that the next thing he could do is continue being a scientist and continue to develop stuff.
Here's the thing. Why don't people like Tony Stark and Reed Richards fund him to do exactly what he's doing at Horizon then?
Well, I'm trying to figure out that. The fact that Tony Stark had most of his memories missing after the last big storylines, so he can't remember a lot of what he did, even the Civil War stuff.
That's with the Ultron junk, right?
No, it's when he did the
Extremis.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
And Tony Stark, one of the smartest men in the world, forgot to back up his memory. Jackass.
If it's Tony Stark, he could have been drunk.
And Peter Parker is actually working with Reed Richards because he's also part of the Future Foundation, which is Reed's special project for scientists in the Marvel Universe to help make the world a better place. So Spidey's part of the Future Foundation, so he still contributes scientifically to that, and he's also reaped the benefits of that by getting his own unstable molecule version of his costume, which can switch between Future Foundation colors and his classic red and blues. So,
well, it can switch to whatever he wants it to.
Pretty much, but they pretty much stick with white and black or red and blue. The thing is, like I said, they're capitalizing on the fact that Peter Parker is a scientist. It's not like he studied photography or anything. Dude was a genius. Created web fluid in high school. And they're finally reaping the idea that maybe he could make money that way instead of constantly taking pictures.
Well, they should have been reaping that idea 20 years ago.
Yeah, yes. I do like that they're actually taking a look at his intelligence. It's like in Superman Earth 1, that one-off they did just before they rebooted everything and invalidated.
A really cool one?
Yeah, it was awesome because Superman is, you know, he was a genius, he was strong, he was good at anything he wanted anything to do. And that's Superman. You know, he is an intelligent person, but that's always kind of set down aside in favor of his strength and his physical attributes.
They mostly downplayed that because in the Silver Age, it was like, what's the point of having any other hero? Superman's so much smarter than everyone else. So in order to make him not, you know, essentially God in a red cape, they had to give him some limits.
It's actually funny you mentioned the Silver Age because a more popular character in the Silver Age was the original Captain Marvel. And DC bought the rights to Captain Marvel so they could sync it.
And said we now have two Supermen for the price of one.
Yeah, well, now we have Shazam.
Yeah, right.
Well, actually, back to your point about why they didn't make Peter make money with science years ago. Back when Peter was in back in the 80s or 70s, Peter Parker actually decided to drop out of graduate school and just become a full-time photographer. And let's be honest, there are a lot of people out there who have dropped out of their chosen degree while they were in college and decided to do something else. And that's the thing, is Peter Parker does things that people would do. He would try that and then maybe try and capitalize on his degree. Like my mother always said, you don't study for a degree because that's the thing you want to jump right into. You have a degree so you can fall back on it. But yeah, like
you
I said,
you're falling forward on it because
but like I said, Peter Parker, he lives and learns just like we all do.
Yeah, but he's like the dumbest genius in the comic book world. That'd be like if Batman was all like, well, I'm going to take 10 years to find myself instead of figuring out how to be the world's greatest detective.
Didn't he take 1 year to find himself? After Infinite Crisis?
Right.
Yeah. But the thing is, like I said, the thing about Peter Parker is he has this whole idea, this whole thing that he'll never catch a break. Ever. So I think sometimes he defeats himself. In fact, the only reason he went for the science job is because Aunt May told him to. And that's because Aunt May was talking to Jonah's wife, and Jonah's wife, Marla, who was a scientist, she used to build spider slayers when they met. She said, ask Aunt May, what does Peter study? What does he do? And she tells him, she just says, Peter Parker is a genius. So that's when she said, let me make a few calls, and that's how he ended up getting his job at Horizon Tech.
Seriously, though, the Avengers have known who Peter Parker is, what he's capable of, for decades. He should have been working at, like, Stark Resilient or something like that.
Well, considering how bad the relationship with Stark went during Civil War, I don't think Peter would ever want to work there.
Well, I'm just saying, like, or at the very least, he should have been working for Richards. He should have, like, a job with S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, and the thing is, those might actually happen at some point. And like I said, we have a whole new direction. Suddenly, we've taken Peter Parker out of the photography mold and have brought up the fact that he is a genius scientist.
So I can't believe it took him 45 years to do that, though.
Well, keep in mind, half the thing was most of Peter Parker's supporting cast were at the Bugle. So it made sense to keep him working at the Bugle because that's what he liked to do and that's where he got to meet people. I remember in the 80s or 90s, he was actually making a lot of money because he collected all of his Spidey photos and published a book called Webs, which is just a collection of his Spider-Man photos.
And so, to be fair, not everyone gets their dream job immediately. Sometimes it takes a while.
Exactly.
Yeah, but difference is that it's a comic book universe, which means that roughly it's a meritocracy.
Right, but one thing that I think has been discussed is that with Spider-Man in particular, accepting a few issues where it hasn't been the case, he's the character that has grown and developed.
Like a person.
Like a person, yeah. And so I can understand...
He can do stupid things.
...getting his dream job right away as part of that dynamic.
Hell, if we wanted to go with the whole comic idea of romance, then Peter Parker would have married Betty Brant, Jonah's secretary, and never would have met other girls. He wouldn't have met Gwen Stacy. She would never have died. He would never have fallen in love with Mary Jane. He would never have been separated from Mary Jane for a couple of years and then come back together. And that's the thing, is with the exception of a few things, like Chris said, Spidey is the same kind of person as everyone else. He makes mistakes. He goes through things. He'll fall in love, fall out of love, and fall in love again. He'll get a good job, and maybe it's not the thing he wanted to do, but it's something good and pays the money. And then he'll actually lose that job, and then he'll find a way to make the thing that was his passion his job. And who knows, maybe next time we see him, he might be backpacking across Europe because he needs to or something. The fact remains that Spider-Man will continue to change, evolve, and go with the times while still trying to adhere to what made him popular in the first place. And it's up to good, talented writers and artists to understand what makes Spider-Man popular, what makes him Spider-Man, and at the same time, take it in new directions while adhering to that.
I just think other books and authors have been doing that for decades with other comic book icons. I don't know why Spider-Man took so long to change in a positive way.
Well, like I said, the problem was, for one thing, the 90s was the worst comic book period of all time, because by that point, every book, and I'm not just talking about Spidey, but every book, DC, Marvel, Image, were so focused on, Flash, events, some things that they were not as much good writing, and they were just busy shoving
and
out
events. They're not focused on events now?
I was about to say, Marvel is a non-stop stream.
I mean, Fear itself was a seven-month-long event, and then we had Shattered Heroes, and then we get Spider-Man to the Ends of the Earth, and then we get then we had Spider-Island, then Ends of the Earth, and then we have the thing with the Ultimate Universe crossover. After that, there'll probably be the crossover with somebody else. We have the Avengers versus X-Men,
the
X-Men schism.
But unlike those, unlike the 90s, where they just basically were like, let's get this out as quick as possible, these days, we're actually having real writing. Yeah, we may have a lot of event storylines still, but the writing is actually better. It's actually thought out, and it actually has full repercussions, and they think about these things. It's not like the 90s where they would just shove everything out with four variant covers and one hologram foil and a discount card shoved in the pages.
I did like Spider Island just because they broke it off into so many other books, and they did the Cloak and Dagger reboot, which I loved.
And the Spider-Girl mini.
Yeah.
And the Venom tie-in. I loved the Venom Spider Island tie-in. I love the Spider Island hardcover just because it takes the Venom issues and puts them in the right places between the Spider-Man issues so you get the full story. Spider Island was like one of the best Spidey events ever. Like this, I'm like, this is what a Spider-Man story, a Super Spider-Man event should be. And I love that book so damn much. Every time I read it, it just makes me smile and love the fact that I am still into Spider-Man now. And like I said, that's what I mean. It's like, yeah, you can have events, but have good writing, have good storytelling.
and like I said, the big problem with the 90s is they were so desperate to get so many events out and get everyone buying these collector's items because people were, because that was the 90s comic book bust. That was when everyone was buying 10 copies of one book because they were convinced that in 20 years that book would be valuable.
I still have my one of the X-Men swimsuit issues, I think, from the 90s. I don't know if you guys remember when they put those out all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. We actually found a few of those at the local comic shop in their little archive area.
you guys just made me think of one of those swimsuit things that had the Punisher.
Yep.
In a mankini.
Yeah.
That's the one I've got. Oh, yeah.
Burn in hell!
Those are some good times, let me tell you.
But yeah, like I said, the difference between the 90s and now is while there's still event comics and everything else, we have so many talented writers that are actually trying to make sure, even if it's an event comic, that it's a significantly well-done event. I mean, I love the fact that Brian Michael Bendis has essentially controlled the history of the Marvel Universe from the 2000s on through New Avengers and Civil War and Secret Invasion and Dark Reign and all that. Oh, I like, man, the fact that, you know, there's been a cohesion. Like, he's had a plot in mind, and these events have all formed towards that. And like I said, that's one thing I'm looking forward to with Ends of the Earth and with Spider Island. And I'm looking forward to Spider-Man, just because I want to see what happens when Peter Parker finds out that in a parallel universe, he died. And I want to see Miles see the kind of person that Peter Parker could have been had he gone in and helped him during the Death of Spider-Man arc instead of watching.
I just don't want the Ultimates to be corrupted by the normal Marvel Universe, because the Ultimate Universe is so good.
Yeah,
they were able to just start over.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, yeah, I love the Marvel Universe.
Let's be honest here, though. No. Let's be honest here. For one, Ultimate Peter Parker could never have been normal Peter Parker if, by virtue of the fact that the Ultimate Universe is inherently different from the mainstream Marvel Universe. The mainstream Marvel Universe was built on 1960s nostalgia, whereas the Ultimate Universe, or Marvel 1610, is built on post 9/11 paranoia and hypernationalism.
Yep.
And also, I'm sorry, with the exception of Ultimate Spider-Man, the Ultimates verse has honestly kind of annoyed me. To quote one person, the thing about the Ultimates book, I'm not saying that all the Ultimates books, I mean the Ultimates, you know, with Captain America and Thor and everything, it's like, they're the Avengers, except they're all assholes.
Their current run is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I was going to say, but they're more realistic. Like, I like that Captain America. I really like all those people because they're more... I don't know. I understand them and I relate to them better.
I'm sorry. There was that scene where Wasp is trying to gently explain to Captain America that Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch are an incestuous couple, and she's making it sound like it's normal. It's like, what? No. Every time I read an old...
Well, it is if you're a Targaryen.
Yeah, and you know, and it doesn't matter because they're not human, so who cares?
Right.
Oh, that's just racist. Mutants aren't human. Is that the problem?
They aren't. Marvel?
Well, if we're talking about racist, we can go full circle back to the top of the episode.
Yeah.
Yes. I also
slide because he's black.
Well, hey, Tombstone? Come on, guys. That was another... We're going to have a black villain, but make sure he's white. Come on.
No, I like the fact that Tombstone's whole thing was that he was ostracized by his community because he was albino.
Yeah, he was funny. I just thought he was just a terrible character overall.
Actually, that's one of the reasons I love the Spectacular Spider-Man cartoon, because in that one, Tombstone got re-envisioned as the ultimate crime boss. And I'm like, this is my favorite version of Tombstone I have ever seen. Like, he's basically Kingpin level badass.
Yeah.
Boy, the thing is, like I've been saying, with the Ultimate Verse, it's just interesting because the Ultimate Verse is more cynical. Characters die more often and stay dead. And the problem is, Ultimate Spider-Man, that book, was fun. It was enjoyable. Even while being set in the Ultimate Universe, it was fun. But Ultimate X-Men, Ultimate Fantastic Four, all of these basically went off in these deranged directions, especially around the storyline Ultimatum, which I think is one of the worst event comics ever.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
That's where I stopped with Ultimate Comics, actually, was Ultimatum. I had been caught up to Ultimate X-Men and Ultimate Spider-Man, and Ultimate Fantastic Four up until that point, and then I lost track of the whole thing.
Yep.
Like I said, the problem was after Ultimatum, the Ultimate Universe suffered for it, and it's one reason why the Ultimate Spider-Man that took place after Ultimatum, you only could fill up 4 volumes before Peter Parker's death, and then they jumped Miles Morales. I like Miles Morales. I really think he's a cool new idea of Spider-Man. And like I said, one thing I like is the idea of this crossover of the two Spider-Men meeting. And the one thing that in the press release that makes me wonder is their whole bit about, well, their whole thing is that there's apparently some villain that ties into the whole Spidey mythos. I'm like, okay, who?
If it's a Marvel zombie, I'm going to be pissed.
Didn't Howard the Duck end up being in one of the Marvel zombie things?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, Army of Darkness.
That's right.
And Army of... Yeah, yeah. That was actually good. And then he ended up in the universe of, like, the werewolf universe.
Marvel's werewolves.
the first one or two zombie trades I liked. After that, I stopped paying attention.
It just got completely, utterly ridiculous.
Yeah.
Especially because it's like, I'm sorry, yes, Marvel Zombies was an interesting idea, but then you kind of overdid it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did like the idea of them eating the Silver Surfer and having the powers cosmic.
Yeah.
And eating Galactus.
Yeah. And the universe.
Yeah.
I still love that issue where they're like, they're eating Ego, the living planet. Like, how did we pass this?
Good times. So,
anyone got anything else?
Well, the thing is, one last
not
thing.
Not on Spider-Man.
Well,
I was going to say, I just dug up the name of my first Spider-Man video game, and it was the Quest Probe one that was originally... I don't know if you guys remember that at all, but Jesus, I feel old. It was on Apple IIe or Apple IIc.
I played the Atari 2600 Spider-Man, where he was basically 5 lines, and he shot a web up the wall and just went...
Well, no, in that one, you had to crawl up the wall, and you were disabling bombs. The Green Goblin left behind. I have 2 copies of that in a back room somewhere right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, the first one I had was on Commodore 64, and then PC and Apple II. So that was revolutionary for me.
I remember playing
the Sega Genesis one.
Spider-Man versus the Kingpin. Good times. I remember the arcade game where you played as Spider-Man, Black Cat, Namor, and Hawkeye in a 4-player thing, and it'd be like traditional Double Dragon-style beat-em-up, and then sometimes you'd have to do some crazy jumping, so the camera would pull back, and suddenly it was a 4-player platformer.
Why the hell was Namor there?
No one knows. This was developed by Sega in Japan, and
there's your problem.
Sega or Japan, which was
Japan thing with Spidey?
Does it have to be an either or?
Yeah, it's an excellent point.
At least Spider-Man didn't summon his giant robot from the live-action Japanese show.
Whatever, that robot showed up in the book Ready Player One and totally rocked. If you guys haven't read that book, you fail at being nerds.
Dude, I've got it on my shelf right now. I just... haven't gotten around to it. I've got other games or books to read.
It is number one on your priority list as of right now.
Absolutely.
I'm actually curious about the new Spidey game, mostly because they keep talking about this new web rush mechanic, and I need to actually see what this mechanic looks like so I can judge it.
I don't trust anything Activision does with Spider-Man games anymore.
Like, oh, come on.
Spider-Man 3 was... That was an abomination.
Spider-Man 2 is my favorite Spider-Man game I've ever played.
1 and 2 were great, and even it was Web of Shadows was the one.
Web of Shadows was cool. Shattered Dimensions was like the ultimate fan letter to all things Spidey.
Yep.
And Edge of Time had a really, really good story to build off of.
But they're not awesome, and I don't trust them to do open world ones. And when you have a solid release date to tie in with a film... That shit doesn't go well.
They're not tying it in with the film. They apparently, their
it'll
thing,
release. It'll release.
It's a follow up to the film.
Yeah,
it's set after, but it's coming out a couple of weeks before the film.
Right, and so it's got that concrete release date. They can't push that, you know.
But here's the thing. But ultimately, it's still a tie in.
Yeah, but
movie tie-in games always suck.
No, they don't.
Most always suck.
There you go.
This tie-in has been in development because their whole thing when people ask them, why was Edge of Time not as good as Shattered Dimensions? And they're like, because our Shattered Dimensions team were working on Amazing Spider-Man from the moment we finished Shattered Dimensions. So, apparently, and from what I've seen, read, and heard, this might be the Arkham Asylum, Arkham City of Spidey games.
I would say that the original PlayStation 1 was the Arkham Asylum / Arkham City of Spider-Man games. It may not have been the best.
It was a step in the right direction.
It wasn't a step in the right direction. It was flat out amazing.
It was great, but at the same time, Spider-Man 2 improved on that formula with the whole free roam and the realistic web slinging. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with this new Spidey game, especially this web rush mechanic they've been pushing, which apparently every time someone describes it from some news site or whatever, they make it sound like it's so amazing. I'm like, you guys are not doing a good job, because I still want to know what the hell it means, because all you're making it sound like is press one button and then it plays itself for you. So can you explain this better for me?
So I just don't trust the gimmick mechanics when they're trying to show off a game like that. You know, like that makes me nervous.
Well, like I said, I'm hoping when I get my copy to tell a really good review. Of course, you know me, I'll be first in line for that game and I'll be first in line for that movie because I am an unrepentant Spider-Man whore.
We've all got our weaknesses.
Yeah.
So,
okay. I think it's funny because he's lasted 50 years, Spider-Man, and he's lasted even though he's had these bad stories and these things. Again, a lot of characters lasted longer despite bad stories.
I was supposed to say let's look at Captain America. He's lasted 70 and he's managed to grow up.
Yeah, but he's still 30-something.
Yeah, but you know, either way, Peter Parker's still 20-something.
No, that's the funny thing. Spider-Man has gone from a teenager to 30-something. He's no longer in his 20s. Like, I think right now we're in the 30s of his life.
Yeah, but I think the point still remains valid, though, is that Captain America has changed. He has evolved. He has adapted. His character has grown. He hasn't been retconned away all of the things that make him Captain America. Batman, okay. Superman, again. Wonder Woman, all of these characters that have lasted more than 50 years have managed to grow and become bigger than they originally were.
Same thing with Spider-Man.
But Spider-Man has frequently had to go back and completely change things, has had to...
I'm sorry.
How has he
frequently gone back? One More Day was a one-off thing.
I just don't think he's changed as much. He's still essentially the exact same character.
Yeah.
And it's not just like there's this overarching theme of him being a good person like Superman or whatever. It's just he's the exact same guy. Just the same guy. And that's what bothers me.
Like, he doesn't have, like, a For Tomorrow series where he knowingly does something that is actually kind of bad in hopes of doing something really good. And not like you know, tiny bad. I'm talking, like, have you guys read Superman For Tomorrow?
Yeah. The two-part?
A million people disappear.
Mm-hmm. It was great.
But yeah.
And they did Superman Birthright, I think, was an incredible take on Superman, too. I don't know if you guys read that.
I really actually don't like Superman a whole lot, but there's just a couple people like Brian Azzarello that just do amazing stuff with the character.
Well, the thing is, I like Spider-Man. I like the fact that he hasn't had to go back and change too much, and I like the fact that even the things that they sometimes change, they try and change it in a way that moves forward instead of going back and changing it. And again, like I said, everyone focuses so much on the whole One More Day storyline when it was like a one-off.
But that's because it destroyed the biggest and most compelling change about that character, which was that Peter Parker was out as Spider-Man. He was in a world with Steve Rogers and Tony Stark, and they said, you know what, this is going to be really hard for us moving forward, so let's just erase it. Let's just get rid of it.
This was the thing. It's like a lot of what happened...
Like, Spider-Man has become their easy character.
But that's one thing I like is that even though they've done that, like I brought up before, talented writers have managed to push Spidey back in the right direction despite the setback. And again, one problem during the 2000s with Civil War and everything is a lot of stuff that happened to Spider-Man was editorially mandated, like unmasking, like the retcon. In fact, J. Michael Straczynski brought up the fact that a lot of his stories that he did while he was writing on Amazing Spider-Man, he didn't like the fact that some of it was taken out of his hands by people outside of the writing sphere for tie in with the events. So I like the fact that now we have Dan Slott, who has taken control of Spider-Man, has an encyclopedic knowledge of Spidey's history, and is basically working the classic Spidey stuff in with new directions. And I'm hoping that this will be a positive change from the bad writing that came about with One More Day. And I like the fact that one of the first things Dan Slott did during Spider Island was negate the whole nobody can know Peter Parker Spider-Man by so now everyone could figure it out. Which means that eventually everyone's probably gonna figure it out. Yeah, I know I sound like I'm being a dead horse and just standing on my rock going on and on about how great Spider-Man is. But the fact is, I love Spider-Man. I love the directions. Even when they mess up, I love when they fix it in their own way to without changing things.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is that when you have a character that's 50 years old, things have to change. And they have to be meaningful changes.
And there are meaningful changes without changing the core of the character. Like I said, he's no longer in school, he's no longer a photographer. Now he's a scientist.
But that's not meaningful changes. That's just he's growing up and his life is moving along. Meaningful changes are things like getting married, loss in his life. You know,
Spider-Man's the poster child for loss in his life.
No, he lost his Uncle Ben and he lost his parents. Fine, that all happened in his past.
He lost
Gwen Stacy, but that all happened. He lost Captain way in the he lost past.
Wolf. He's lost Ben Reilly, the closest thing he had to a brother. He lost Jameson's wife because Spider-Sense was damaged and he couldn't save her. He's lost so many characters. There was one issue of Amazing Spider-Man that focused specifically on his nightmare, remembering everyone he's ever lost, and ending with him making a decision that no matter what, on his watch, no one dies. And that's one thing I like, is this whole thing is he's made the vow, no one dies at all. Hero, villain, doesn't matter. If he finds out, no one else is going to die on his watch. And I know he's not going to be able to save everybody, but I love the fact that he's made this commitment. It's no longer just let's just do as much good as I can. He's made the solid line in the sand going, no one dies. Like I said, the problem is a lot of people gave up on Spider-Man after the retcon, and no one's paying attention to the fact that the current books are moving forward, developing so many new ideas, developing so many new things for this classic character. And that's the thing, is that the book is getting great reviews, it's coming out with great stories, it's going in the right direction, and thankfully, it's moving as far away from the stupidity that has damaged the book in the past, and I'm loving every moment of it. I'm also loving the fact that there's only one Spidey book to worry about. So all the stories stay consistent and don't get bad. We don't have events crossing from book to book to book.
Well, no, and that is a good idea. But the thing is that you have to get is that for those of us who aren't necessarily Spider-Man super fans, we have a whole lot of bad blood that we got to get over. Because it's not some, it is a lot.
That's why pushing. Read the news, everything from the big time arc onwards, written by Dan Slott. Because this has actually saved Spider-Man for me. I, for a while, had given up on the Spider-Man comic books as having gone in a bad direction, gone way too dark and way too convoluted and way too out there. And I love that Dan Slott has made it so I can finally enjoy Spider-Man the way I used to. And as long as we have writers like Slott and we have characters who are willing to look back at the past, interpret in good ways, and push on forward with new ideas while keeping the same core of the character, Spider-Man is going to continue to last just as long as every other superhero out there. Ow, my throat hurts.
I don't know. Now that he's made a blanket statement like that, I give Spider-Man 4 years.
Oh, the pain that I shall visit upon thee.
Dude, if I'm right, though, you're gonna call me up. You're going to be crying. You're like, oh, my God, Tom, I should listen to you 4 years ago.
Are you kidding? If that actually happens, I will be stalking outside Marvel's offices with a sign saying, bring Spidey back.
Well, seriously, the only person who's actually managed to really stay dead in the Marvel Universe is Jean Grey.
And Gwen Stacy.
Is Johnny Storm alive yet?
Yeah, he's back.
Oh.
Because God forbid that something be permanent.
In fact, actually, Spider-Man's had the most characters stay dead in his continuity.
Yeah.
Well, this seems like a good place to...
Yeah, so this has been episode 26 of Marooners Talk. Are we done?
I believe so.
Because we could keep going on it, I'm sure. And all
this is going to turn into is an argument about whether or not Spidey sucks or not.
Things episode.
Yeah.
We have one of those. I think we're good on it for another 3 months.
Okay. We'll schedule one for August.
I hope everyone continues to read the Spidey Month articles that are coming out.
Yeah, they've been good. Oh, now,
totally unrelated note, everyone needs to go see Cabin in the Woods if they haven't seen it yet.
I want everyone to join me at the midnight screening of Amazing Spider-Man in 3D when they can. You shut up.
I don't know if I'm going to 3D. I might try the Avengers marathon before that comes out. But
word.
We'll see.
No, Adam, I did enjoy Cabin in the Woods, but there was just something about it that just kind of fell flat. Like, I thought that it was kind of anticlimactic towards the end.
I have not had that fun in a movie in years. I can't remember the last
time. It was really fun, but it was just marketed entirely wrong.
Oh, that I completely agree with. Okay. Do you see the Left 4 Dead reference at the end?
Yes, I did.
Okay, that, I have yet to see Cabin in the Woods, so please do not spoil anything.
We're not spoiling anything. Like, literally, it's just like... Like, no, I'm just saying, like, for me personally, the ending just fell flat.
All right.
I can see that. It's just, it's a very brilliant satire film, but
it's way more self-aware than Scream.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely.
It's, like, the best thing about it is, like, this is, like, you can tell that this is, like, Joss Whedon grown up.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, it's
great. That's really cool.
Everyone should see it, especially video game fans, because they're so... many video game references in there. Tons. Hmm. So it's fun just to see for that and pick them apart.
Okay. This has been episode 26. You can find us at facebook.com/maroonersrock, maroonersrock.com, Twitter at maroonersrock, etc., etc., etc.
Peace out, y'all.
Yeah, that'll do it.